Well, good morning. Before I start, I just want to express my own personal thanks for the gift of music this morning and for the uplifting songs that we've heard and sung today. So thank you so much. And I must relate one quick story. In our little congregation in Victorville, we had an elderly gentleman who was a violinist, and he always played in our congregation before. And about 4 years ago, he was cutting something and had an accident and cut off one of his fingers of his fret hand, and it was reattached, but it turned to be at a terrible angle, and his hand hurt, and he couldn't play anymore. And he died last month after a long and fruitful life. And I just so thank you for bringing that memory of our friend Jim back to us and for your mastery. And thank you so much. Thank you. It's a blessing. All right. Well, I'm going to do something that I don't think I've ever done before, maybe once. But we're going to take a survey. Now, I'm going to bet that many of us, maybe most of us, I'm going to bet that most of us have checked our DNA. You know, those 10 milliliter vials of sputum that you have to send into a referral lab somewhere. So let's just have a show of hands. How many of you have checked your DNA? Okay, one, two, come on, raise them high. There's got to be more. I'm going to lose my bet. Come on. All right, well, we're a distinct minority. What can I say? Well, all right. But exactly why we do that is variable. Yeah, some of us are curious about possible medical problems. Do I have that gene that predisposes me to cancer or diabetes? You know, and that list goes on and on. Others wish to know about their ancestry. Am I Anglo? Am I English or Irish? Maybe Scottish? And when the results arrive, one wonders, where did that American Indian come from? Do I have missing family somewhere? Sometimes, even as on the TV soap operas, the questions, the answers to the questions, may cause more trouble than the original question itself. But this is a way of looking at our own Unitarian Universalist faith, because I look at our Unitarian Universalist sources as a clue to the DNA of our own denomination. Although short, they help us to know where we came from and maybe where we're going. To me, the sources flesh out the bones of our seven Unitarian Universalist principles that we read here once a month, I'm told, and in our congregation we read them every week. And I think our sources, though, have a beauty and a warmth and even a connection to us that's beyond those of our principles. Now, before going any further, I want to get into some Unitarian Universalist polity. I want to make sure to mention the Unitarian Universalist Commission of Appraisal. How many of you are aware of the Commission of Appraisal? Any hands? There's a few hands here. Okay. Well, this is part of how we govern ourselves, about how our denomination works. Now, I've mentioned this because it's so unique and so necessary to understand another aspect of the DNA of our denomination. I feel need to be explained. So the Commission on Appraisal is a standing committee of the Unitarian Universalist Association, and its job is to generally look over policies and structures within our denomination, which may need to be changed for the denomination as a whole. Now, there's no particular limit on what sorts of issues the commission can investigate, but there are generally issues that are referred to it by individuals or pastors, board members, etc. And they look at things and figure things out among themselves, and after the inquiry, the issue and their opinion about what to do about it, if anything, is reported out to its boss, the Unitarian Universalist General Assembly, which is taking place this next week, at its annual meeting. And there, we, the delegates from the General Assembly, vote up and down on the recommendations, and from there, they're either adopted or denied. But listen to this. This is the important part. Among the few specific tasks that are assigned to the commission is a review of our foundational UU principles and sources. This is mandated to be done every 15 years at least. And changes to either of them are welcomed, but they must be approved by the majority vote of the entire Universalist Unitarian Association at the annual meeting. Now, what's this got to do with our sources? Well, we UUs are a funny lot. To my knowledge, we are the only denomination that requires a rigorous periodic review of its foundational theology. Think about that. Do we need a new principle? Should we get rid of one? Do our sources adequately represent who we are, what our DNA is? And just think, when was the last time any mainline Christian denomination required review of a foundational belief or document and authorized its revision at its annual meeting? We did that only 7 years ago on a close vote. There were changes recommended, but were not approved, despite the recommendation of the commission to do so. And I think that this reveals a really deep aspect of our Unitarian Universalist belief system, that we believe unequivocally in evolution. We know that people and our human understandings and our way of thinking all evolve over time, that the statements and goals and explanations which fitted and served us well 10 or 15 years ago may not do so now. We are evolutionists, I think. We feel we must adapt to new circumstances. And consider how different that is from the traditional Christian understandings. For instance, the Nicene Creed has been carefully guarded and has been completely unchanged for almost 1,800 years since 323 AD when it was written. 1,800 years without change. We UUs just wither spiritually and intellectually under the weight of such rigidity. We just do. So what do our sources have to say? I have here, let's read them together, but we don't have our hymnals out today, so you're just going to have to listen to them from me. So here are our sources. Our living Unitarian Universalist faith tradition draws from many sources. Direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. Words and deeds of prophetic women and men which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Wisdom from the world's religions which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. Jewish and Christian teachings which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. Humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science, and which warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit. And spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and which instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. Grateful for the religious pluralism which enriches and ennobles our faith, we are inspired to deepen our understanding and to expand our vision. And as free congregations, we enter into this covenant, promising to one another our mutual trust and support. You know, I have always been struck by the graceful and poetic nature of the prose. But this list of UU sources seems to me to be such a busy blueprint for us. I mean, really, if you think about it, our sources don't really tell us much, except that we have to figure out our own personal Unitarian Universalist religion pretty much by ourselves. We have to experience transcendence by ourselves, and we are given absolutely no guidance regarding how to do that. We have to find the words of our prophets without being told who they might be or what book to read. We have to gather wisdom from the world's religions without being given a clue as to which ones, except that we have to familiarize ourselves with Jewish and Christian teachings, and that we need to feel the love of God and to extend that to our neighbors. And we need to be familiar with the reasoned results and principles of science, and yet we also need to understand older animistic, earth-centered traditions and endorse and understand the rhythms of nature. And lastly, we're told to trust each other and to deepen our understanding without being given any idea what to study. Well, looked at this way, these UU sources, our sources, are indeed a lot of work. They indicate that our living faith is person-centered, unique, and does not depend fundamentally on external authority, but rather on our own individual interpretations of what others external to us have to say. And at different times in our lives, we will naturally be sensitive to different voices, different subjects. Our sources, therefore, do not give us fixed didactic lessons in where and how to look for personal and spiritual guideposts of living, because our lives and our understandings constantly change and evolve over time. Now, there are some people who seem to require certainty and a fixed, unchanging instruction for their lives, emanating from an authority greater than their own. These people are almost never Unitarian Universalists. We who have embraced this denomination, however, instinctively understand that there is no universal, fixed, and unchanging program for living, even if it comes from a highly regarded external authority figure. I, for instance, just cannot grant to any external authority the capacity to make me think or believe anything just because that person or a book states that I must believe it. Somehow, I am compelled to figure this out on my own. And similarly, I cannot mandate that others adopt my particular thoughts or beliefs. They have the right, after all, to their own opinions and beliefs as well. We Unitarian Universalists are independent sorts. We seem to be willing, and indeed, we seem to have the need to seek the guideposts for our lives independently. And we tend to have a great deal of faith in our own intelligence, tenacity, which enables us to undertake these tasks. Well placed or not, that's how we function. Yet, as our seventh principle teaches us, we do understand that we are all deeply interrelated and that no person can truly be an island independent from others in our thought or in our actions. The implication is that we need each other, that we must share with each other our thoughts and our aspirations, our convictions and our questions, our joys and our sorrows, just as we've done this morning. And doing so, we may understand and center our own life's journey through deep care of and attentive listening to all the others around us in our lives. We help to center ourselves by sharing truthfully with others directly from our hearts. We cannot accomplish this alone. We need, each of us, the help and the ears of others. This is the basis of our covenant and our promise to each other for our mutual trust and support, of which our sources speak. This is a foundation of our faith. As an example, Unitarian Universalist Reverend Catherine Senghas has adopted Buddhist wisdom in her faith journey. She writes in Reverend Wayne Arneson's book, Buddhist Voices in Unitarian Universalism, that as a UU minister and, quote, as a human being, I have three interdependent aspects of my nature that I struggle to understand: my religion, my spiritual practice, and my theology. I am a Unitarian Universalist in my religion. I'm a Zen Buddhist in my spiritual practice. And I connect best to the school of processed thought as a metaphysical sense of ongoing creation in my theology. And she goes on to explain that process theology. And these are important words. Process theology lends me great hope. I believe that every moment is based on all that has ever happened and holds the potential for all that is possible. What happens in any given instant contains doors that open and doors that close. We stand on the threshold of all that is possible, and we are facilitators, even catalysts, for what happens next or for what does not. What an awesome and awful responsibility for each of us as agents of creation, moment by moment. Who wouldn't want to be wide awake and fully alive for all of this? There is so much at stake. And regarding her Zen Buddhist practice, she writes, "My Zen practice helps me to stay connected with my core theology. If I'm invited to pray, for instance, at an interfaith setting, I look to understand the spiritual connections of our shared spiritual work. And when I'm able to get beyond the words, beyond the unfamiliar, or what just isn't true for me, I recognize the same longing for connection and meaning-making that is the root of my own religious impulse to devote my life to social change. Within my Buddhist spiritual practice, I'm deeply influenced by the basic moral tenets of Buddhism, their precepts, and the three jewels, which are the Buddha, the teachings, and the community, and the three pure precepts: do not create evil, practice good, and actualize good for others. I chant three refuges alone and with others to remind myself of the scaffolding upon which I depend for insight, wisdom, and support. I vow to avoid evil. I vow to practice good. I vow to save all things. At times, I feel the great weight of the injustice and systemic oppressions that I witness every day. But without this practice, I imagine I would be terribly discouraged. Instead, and with them, I am filled with hope." My friends, I want to finish with some final thoughts that kind of tie this together. Last year, a year ago now, I went to the March for Life in Riverside in the wake of one of our horrifically frequent mass school shootings. I made and I carried a sign, and I wore my yellow Standing on the Side of Love Unitarian Universalist shirt. I estimated the crowd to be perhaps some 5,000 or 7,000 people, and it was tremendously heartening. Even if the young people at the podium spoke too fast and not loudly enough. Raise your hand if I'm guilty, please. But we marched en masse from the old courthouse in Riverside through the streets of downtown, as I had more than 50 years ago in San Francisco during one of the early anti-war marches there in 1967. I looked for a corner around which this stream of humanity would course and where I could take a photo to fully capture the event. However, unlike that San Francisco day over 50 years ago, there was no hill, there was no overlook to get that long perspective. Disappointed, I walked on. The route then took us to the intersection of Lemon and Mission Streets in Riverside. That's the intersection where the Riverside Universalist Unitarian Church is located. This venerable old stone church, founded in 1881, had a large rainbow-colored banner strung across its front over the entrance. It read, "In this congregation, we believe. Love is love. Black lives matter. Climate change is real. No human being is illegal. Women's rights are human rights. All genders are whole, holy, and good." How prophetic and welcoming to my heart was that UU banner, and how representative it was to me of our UU DNA. Finally, after leaving the march, I walked up the pedestrian mall towards Mission Street, where I had parked. In the 5 years since I had previously walked this route, new statues had been placed. The first one I saw was a life-size bronze, masterful statue of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. He's pictured walking resolutely in full-sized bronze with two young children at his side. And etched onto his bronze clothing were the images of the civil rights struggles of the 1960s, Rosa Parks and her bus. A group of black people looking forward while behind them a water cannon fires at nameless people on a bridge in Selma. And on his right side, the image of three girls representing those killed in the Birmingham church bombing in 1964. There were three other statues, one of Cesar Chavez and some farm workers, another of a hero who helped South Korea return to democracy, and another of a woman on a high pedestal with outreaching hands, representing the feminine nurturing side of humanity. But it was Martin Luther King's statue that moved me to tears. So much was lost. And yet, despite tearing up, this day was profoundly uplifting. A new generation is finally rising up to take Reverend King's place after a me generation's gap, to take my place, to stand powerfully, to make the world a better place when I too am gone. I feel I have begun to see the dawn at the darkest hours of the night. I am again reminded of Reverend Singhouse's thoughts of process theology, and I'm going to read them again as we finish. Process theology lends me great hope, great hope. I believe that every moment is based on all that has ever happened and holds the potential for all that is possible. What happens in any given instant contains doors that open and doors that close. We stand on the threshold of all that is possible, and we are facilitators, even catalysts, for what happens next or what does not. What an awesome and awful responsibility for each of us as agents of creation, moment by moment. Who wouldn't want to be awake and fully alive for all of this? There is so much at stake. To conclude, we have now changed and evolved sufficiently to use Reverend Singhouse's words that we are now like creative gods, that each of us are truly the agents of creation, moment by moment. This is the precious creative power alluded to in our UU sources. And what's in our collective UU DNA, each of us is empowered as an evolving, ongoing creative process. And as we live and create our lives, we let our light shine out to brighten and comfort each other throughout our life's journey. And thus, we honor our collective UU DNA and the source of our UU power, which we both inhabit and create. My friends, may we always be awake to the great and good power inherent in the DNA of our own lives and the DNA of our denomination and that of this wonderful congregation, the Unitarian Universalists of Santa Clarita Valley. Namaste. Holiness and power in you helps me to realize the holiness and power within me. Thank you. And blessed be each and every one of us on this and every day.